Welcome to Lifelines. This is John Augustine. We need to count, to calculate, to compute. Less than 100 years ago, most computers were women, sometimes resorting to an abacus, an ingenious counting machine dating back 5,000 years. Many people contributed to the transition between then and now, but the largest leap forward is credited to an Englishman named Alan Turing. His remarkable and tragic story is told by David Levitt in a biography titled after an old Alfred Hitchcock film, The Man Who Knew Too Much. Turing was drawn to numbers from childhood. Before ever he could read, he would stare at numbers on the signs and addresses on the public streets. When he was 14, his maths teacher complained that Alan was not doing well, spending too much time investigating advanced mathematics. In his early 20s, he devoted himself to pure mathematics. Another towering British intellectual, Bertrand Russell, asserted that pure mathematics is a subject in which we do not know what we are talking about, or whether what we are saying is true. This study is often accompanied by eccentricity. Turing preferred a rope to a belt, consequently always appearing underdressed, and he was inordinately fond of Walt Disney's movie of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, even as an adult. In the 1930s, Turing focused on how a computing machine could work. His thinking at this point was thoroughly hypothetical, not imagining that such a machine would or could ever be built. Still, what he described was a prototype of the modern computer. He published his first important paper on computable numbers in his early 20s. On the strength of that work, he was able to move from England to the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton. Here were gathered many of the finest minds of the day, including German scientists who had escaped the rise of the Nazis, including Albert Einstein. But while Turing's paper had aroused interest, no one at Princeton could foresee where it would lead. He returned to England in 1938 to join a group working on cryptography, the making and breaking of codes. Everyone could see the war coming, but the Allies were not aware of the infamous Enigma machine the Germans had developed and its unbreakable codes. Turing again worked with a team of brilliant people, including the British chess champion and some crossword puzzles experts. Turing's solution was to design and build a machine to confront the Germans' machine. He succeeded. His codebreaker was 6.5 feet high, 7 feet wide, and weighed a ton. But it worked. His machine even broke Enigma's naval code, thus saving several Allied warships. He was, in a way, a war hero. But in the 1950s, he was arrested for gross indecency with another man. Turing was gay, and Britain was famously intolerant of homosexuals. He was given a choice between prison or chemical emasculation. He chose the chemicals. They made him sick, and he bore it for a while, until one morning when his landlady found him dead in his room. He was just 42 years old. Beside him were the remnants of a poisoned apple, a poetic suicide for this lifelong fan of Snow White. The irony of his fate is deafening. If his homosexuality had been discovered during the war, he would have been removed immediately from his work as a potential security risk. It's too much to say he won World War II, but without his code-breaking, Britain and the free world might have lost the war. Recognition of Turing's other accomplishments came slowly. He had been admitted to the Royal Society, a prestigious honor. In 1999, Time magazine named him one of the 20 greatest scientists of the 20th century. By then, his contributions to the development of computers was much more evident. But he had foreseen it, explaining his machine to an interviewer. "This is only a foretaste of what is to come, only the shadow of what is going to be." We live in the age that Alan Turing made possible. This program has been Lifelines. I'm John Augustine.